Good morning, everybody. I'm Bill Clark. I'm a friend of AA. I'm very honored to be here and to have a chance to chair this session. I can tell from the buzz that there's a lot of excitement about it. I can tell from having just met and talked with our speakers for a few minutes that you're in for a terrific ride, and I think we're all going to have a really good time this morning. As I said, an honor to be here. It's my first time chairing a session like this, so I'm a bit nervous about getting everything straight and organized, especially with all of you anticipating such a good time. I think we're ready to go with our first speaker. Our first speaker is Dr. Peter Luongo, a social worker by training, who is the director of the Maryland Alcohol and Drug Abuse Administration. Please give Dr. Luongo a warm welcome.
Okay, that's fine. Well, good morning. I'm Pete. I'm a friend of AA.
Hi.
Yeah, I want to start by going over everything that I learned in my training about alcoholism. Oh, now, wait a minute. Yeah, I'm done. As you would expect, my first job was in an alcohol and drug abuse agency. I had no clue what I was doing. One of the first fellows I met that I was supposed to help, it was pretty obvious that I was in trouble, but he was in worse trouble. I did everything that I was taught to do, and I kept going back to my supervisor saying, you know, I really don't think this is working. And he would tell me, you're doing really fine. And I said, but he's not. Keep doing it, he said. So I was empathic as hell. I was understanding as hell. I would reflect. I would restate. And he didn't get better. I have a ruthless practicality to my personal life and my career. And it wasn't long before I figured out that I really didn't know a blessed thing about this. And I needed to know something, or there was going to be a wake of destruction in my path, that the more people I helped, the more sick they would get. And that made me wonder whether I should have stuck to coaching high school basketball, which is really how I started. So as it turns out, I stumbled upon a couple of guys who seemed to know a hell of a lot more about it than me, and they seemed to be doing pretty well with this, right? So I shut up, and I started watching them, kind of learning a little about it. I found out later they were two hatters, guys who were in recovery and who were working for the old alcoholism program, and they were amazing. In fact, they were so amazing that my immediate bosses told me to stay away from them. These guys are rogues, cowboys. They were bandits. They were con artists. They were great. These guys taught me more than I ever knew was out there. I learned how to do home visits. I learned how you actually get drunk people into the back of a car and take them to the hospital. I learned the things that I never learned in my personal and my professional life. These guys knew a hell of a lot more than I did. But unless you think this is one of those made-for-TV stories and how wonderfully accepting these guys were of me, you would be wrong. They decided I had to pay my dues, and they made me humble in a lot of ways. They made sure that I consistently learned how much I didn't know. And they were really good at it, by the way. And one of them was going to be here today. He's celebrating his 41st year. Unfortunately, he took sick, and he's very disappointed. I'm going to get him this tape. He is fondly known as Humble Herb in my spots, in Herb W. And when Herb and I teamed up, people were sure it was to be a war. His name, Humble, was well-earned. And I was thought to be a little bit arrogant at those times. I have no idea how people got that thought. And as it turns out, Herb's job, Herbie and I, were a hell of a team. He taught me what I needed to know. And Herb, I gave Herb respectability, actually. And that is as big a lie as I'll ever tell. You know, what I found out was there were things that science doesn't know. Science is never going to know. No matter how good we are at understanding neurobiology, no matter how good we are at explaining things on a molecular and a cellular level, we will never, ever be able to explain what happens when people turn to help each other. We will never be able to explain what happens with this fellowship, ever. And that's the piece that healthcare needs to find out. That's the piece that you help us to understand. That's the piece that means recovery. Not so much the science, not so much the studies, and yeah, I mean, I do that stuff now too. I mean, I contribute in that way. But the piece that you contribute for us is the piece that makes it all work. I never learned a thing about this until I ran into those rogues and those cowboys. I continue to meet rogues and cowboys and con artists, and they're great. You know, they're the people that keep me going. They're the people that keep it fresh. Because right now we're bucking a hell of a bad trend, I think, in healthcare, and that is to reduce people to the smallest common denominator, to move them through very quickly. You know, to spend 10 minutes, to spend 15 minutes, man, find that right medication. And we don't listen. I've spent 10 years of my time looking at how to teach healthcare professionals. I taught for 10 years as an associate at Johns Hopkins. And as a person who was in the curriculum to teach healthcare professionals about addictions. And you know what I found out is that, you know, you really buck a trend. You know, Hopkins is a world-class research university. And I haven't hired a psychiatrist out of Hopkins in the last 10 years because they're great psychopharmacologists. They really are. They're great pill guys. And they can't interview people. You know, you got to talk to people. And that's what we teach. You know, listen. That's what I learned. I shut up. I listened. I got run over a few times. I got tooled a few times. But it was the best way for me to get it. I shut up and I listened. That's the piece that's hard right now in healthcare. You get pushed, pushed, pushed to move people through. It's fighting a trend to sit down and to talk to somebody, to have compassion, to listen, to let people tell their story. And in telling their story, you discover who they are. A colleague tells us that when he talks to people, when he listens, he says diagnoses disappear. They're just a person. And that's what I understood from those cowboys and rogues. Shut up. Look. Listen. Support. And sometimes you push, but you do it while you're there. You know, you don't dial it in. That's what I really learned. You know, I really learned that people are experts about themselves. And I really learned that at times, science is really overrated. That sounds pretty funny coming from a guy like me. But, you know, it really is. You miss the humanity. So for us, in the healthcare side, we need to keep listening. You know, you need to keep talking. Programs that I'm part of always, always have the fellowship in them. There are people who are two-hatters, but everybody's introduced to the fellowship. There are institutional meetings, their sponsors. It's an integral part of getting well because, you know, once you get past the detox, you know, once you get past some of the other issues and once the social workers are helping you with certain things, the fact is people get and stay well. by participating. My colleagues in healthcare need to know that. They need to learn more about it. You need to do some outreach to us. And you aren't. And people aren't. Just being here today obviously says we need to be connected with you. I prize and really appreciate my alcoholic friends who are in AA. It taught me a lot, and I'm very proud to be affiliated. When my friend Arnold asked if I would consider coming here, I thought he was kidding. You know, I'm thinking, well, you know, I know a little bit about Arnold's past. You know, he's running. You know, it's just another one of those running by me scams. And so I said, of course. Oh, sure. No problem. I absolutely had no idea he was serious. I absolutely had no idea that I would get accepted. It is clearly, you know, the top honor for me in my professional career. And I appreciate being here. I appreciate you, and I appreciate being a friend of AA. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peter. It's just really touching. It reflects on my own experience. I'm a physician. I've been working in the field for 30-some years. And, you know, I learned everything that I know about recovery and alcoholism from some just wonderful, wonderful AA people. I never thought about the rogues thing before, but I like that. Yeah. It's pretty good. People were kind and firm with me, and it was a great combination. I understand that I get to help people out with some of the medical issues sometimes. People get pretty shaky, and they get pretty sick, and I really can make a contribution. But it's clear that, in the end, the patient does all the real work of getting well. And what's become even clearer to me over the years is that it's you folks that help people get a life back and to really become whole and human beings again in wonderful ways. I'm honored again to be able to introduce our next speaker. we have an international panel this morning, and I'm really excited about that. Dr. Li Bing is a psychiatrist at the Institute of Mental Health in Beijing. She was a part of the large conference in China a couple of years ago with AA, and tells me that she's very pleased to be able to talk with this group this morning. Please give her a warm welcome.
Good morning. I'm honored to be here to share the feelings with AA. My topic today is the AA, how AA grow in China. 5 years ago, Dr. David Paul brought me and Dr. Guo Song to the Minneapolis to attend the AA convention. At that time, it gave me a very deep impression. I saw so many alcoholics staying in sober, so I never believed that. Really. And the second impression for me that although there are 150 countries attend the meeting, they hold their flags in the convention, but there's no Chinese flag. At that time, I thought the next meeting, we should hold our flags in the next meeting. But after I came back, I prepared to start meeting in our country, but I made a lot of difficulties. First, our China situation. You know, the Chinese people never think alcohol can cause any problems in a country. So in China, now with the open door policy, we contact with the Western world, and more people now become businessmen. They do, if you are successfully a businessman, you should drink successfully at the drinking table. So, and the young people, that's for the middle-aged people. But for the young people, because of they think the Western style as the is the fashion, so more and more people go to the bar at night. So the drink, and the recent study show in China there are more than three million alcoholics in our country. So such a big problem. But you know, there's no policies on alcohol. We have no education of, to the public, to the young people. We have we have alcohol commercial advertising in everywhere, in TV, in magazine, in newspapers, even in CCTV, the main channel in our country, you know. And our government never think. They think drug is a problem. They never think alcohol can cause any problems. So nobody pay any attention to alcohol problem. In China, you know, the hospital, we separated. The drug people are governed by the police station, by police hospital. But the alcohol are governed by our public health, our doctor. So when alcoholic admit to hospital, they often admit to psychiatric hospital. But in the psychiatric hospital in China, there's no psychologist, no social workers, no counselors working in such hospital. Only our psychiatrists and the nurses do all of the work. So this is the one difficulty. The other difficulty is our religion. 92% of our people have no religion. So we grow up in the country with no religion. They never think, they never know what is God. They think God is crazy for them. No God in the world. So it's difficult at first for us to introduce AA, the God. So at first I translate the 12 steps, not God, it's the big power. So, And another difficulty is our people, we have no custom of regular meetings. We no church at that time, and we have more conservative. Men are thought to be are not courage to say their inner feelings with others. So if so, they are think to be craving. Yeah. So at first, with the AA meeting, the men. No one say something. Oh, they only say the other things, not themselves. So it's difficult for us. And another difficulty is the place. We have no church to support our AA meetings, no place. At first, I think the first AA meeting should initiate by our doctors. So first, I get the support from my boss. So they should he should support. I give them a place for AA members. So but my boss he's very good. He has a knowledge about AA. So he supports me. I find a place for AA freely. Yeah. And then we start the first AA meeting. I write many letters to GSO to get support, to make it clear about the meaning of a God and something like that. And we got many materials from GSO. We have, at that time, we had AA members, the foreign people working in China, they have a secretly AA meeting in their home at the beginning. And I contact with GSO and ask them to ask the foreign members come to our hospital to start AA meeting. So Mr. Brad, today he's not here, he's the first foreign members come to our hospital to organize the first AA meeting to tell our members how the procedure of AA. Yeah, and at that time I attend AA meeting because I have no idea of AA at that time. I attend use my leisure time about 1 year. Yes. Attend every AA meeting in a hospital, and I organized, I asked patients and telephoned them and asked them to come to the meeting. So, so our first meeting started. But at first, many people come and go. Some only attend meeting one or two times. Some people relapse and never come back again. And sometimes only one AA members at the meeting. And one AA members and I. And but gradually, we, as time goes on, we have gradually have fixed members, and we start to do 12 steps instead of just telling stories. And we began to know the importance of sponsor. So now the members of our AA meeting have their own sponsor. And also, the AA members go back to hospital to help the new patients. Yeah. And but as time goes on, AA members became realized that they should independent from hospital because AA is their own group, not belong to hospital. But at that time, they had only such idea, but never do anything. They didn't know how to do that. But thanks for the SARS outbreak 2 years ago, the AA members were not allowed to the hospital to have a meeting at that time. Yeah. So I was worried at that time. They were worried. They began to realize that they should donate money to rent a room. So they began to do. Yeah. Yeah. So finally, our AA members had their own AA meeting 2 years ago. Well, we call the Chinese headquarters, yeah. Yeah. From that time, the foreign members moved their meeting from their home to this room. And now we have a Chinese-speaking group, we have an English-speaking group, we have a bilingual-speaking group. And we also have two groups in the hospital. So in Beijing, there are three groups. And after that, we realized that we should develop our groups. So I brought AA members to the other part of China outside of Beijing. Around Beijing, we set up another three groups. So now we have another group in north part of China. Now there are seven groups in China. Yesterday, I was deeply moved, tears, because I saw our flags held in convention. So I was so moved. That, as you're saying, I'm responsible. I'll say I'm responsible for developing another AA groups. Maybe the next convention we will have 30, 40 or more than groups. Thank you.
Thank you so much. On behalf of this group, I think AA has a true friend here. And it's just such a wonderful example of how people can help each other across professional lines and do it really person to person and people to people. It's just terribly moving and exciting, isn't it? And our next speaker is another example of that sort of personal and professional connection. Those of you who managed to make the big meeting last night, I suppose a few of you were there, did hear Pushan ask that women swarm India, please. He referred to the physician who had helped him get sober, and that man is with us this morning, I'm very pleased to say. And he's already been swarmed. I think several women have already made arrangements to get together a larger group and begin that swarming process in India. So wonderful things are already happening. Dr. Arun Jarajani is a psychiatrist and a toxicologist. He's co-founder of the Kripa Foundation some 25 years ago, still in operation, specifically dedicated to helping people with alcohol problems, drug problems, and HIV problems in India. At the present time, he's dean of the Kripa Institute training programs and spends much of his time in teaching responsibilities. I'm very honored to be able to present him to you, and I'd like for you to give him a warm welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm Rajiv, and I'm a friend of AA. I'm grateful to GSO US and Canada, as well as GSO India, that I could come here and share my views. Only one request before I start. I have addiction of speaking, so please stop me. My association with AA goes far back in time when I just finished my graduation in medical degree, and my professor asked me, what would you like to specialize into? healthcare profession, most of the time people perceive it as medical doctors. Not necessarily so. There are social workers, nursing staffs, all people involved in those who are helping other people in issues related to health. So my professor asked me, what do you want to specialize into? And hell, I didn't know what I should be. So he says, what about working with patients suffering with alcoholism? I said, great, why not? It is only after 2 years that I found out that my professor himself was an alcoholic. And I was blessed, believe me, I was blessed, that it is my first input related to AA came from my professor. He says, look, hang on, pause. I have been trying to learn a lot about alcoholism, but there are no books which teaches us how to deal with this patient. And I very much agree with my previous speakers that every single patient, as of today, in last 25 years probably, I have seen 300,000 patients. But every single patient, I treat him as my teacher. Because something which is different and unique in his life, which helped me to understand that why alcoholics are alcoholics. And believe me, after all these years, I have still not yet been able to figure it out. My journey began 76 with this professor. Then I did my post-graduation in psychiatry. And naturally, my subject thesis, which I had taken up, is a personality profile in patients suffering with issues related to alcoholism. Now, it was very interesting. I needed my subjects to study. And there were a few people who needed help in the hospital administration. So it became a very beautiful symbiotic relationship. It was a win-win situation. And it so happened that I got my patients whom I can study, and they got help by getting admission to the hospital for their primary detoxification process, etc. And I was fortunate, and I was open-minded person, so I decided that I will take some patients, you know, who will be taking treatment, medical doctors, prescriptions, medicines, take treatment, go home. Another group of people who would come, get admitted, take treatment, get some counseling by a professionally qualified counselor. And the third group, which is the patients who are taking treatment, does finish with the treatment and go attend AA meetings. Believe me, it is very interesting for a doctor to write down a prescription where he says, attend AA meetings. And I was so happy. This morning I was talking to someone that they are planning a project here, and they were some exchange of ideas. And I said, yes, I have done that before. That before the patient would go and see the doctor, he has to go and attend AA meetings. It would help definitely. It is not only AA, it is Al-Anon, Al-Ateen, all. Now, what happens is that gradually this relationship becomes stronger. And then, of course, the Kripa Foundation, which it's a charitable trust which I was one of the co-founders. I was fortunate. I came to Minnesota in Hazelden for a short while to understand a little more technical aspects of. And when I went back, I met a person who was recovering, and he wanted to start something in which we can help people. This was 1981, and he was searching for a doctor who can help, who has known a little bit about AA, and fortunately we bumped into each other. Then it so happened that we also found a like-minded person, a priest. And now all three of us joined hands together and we decided that something should be done. And that is where we started what was described as Kripa Foundation. Word Kripa means Sanskrit word for grace. And it is very interesting observation what Dr. Ling said, that in China she came across a lot of patients who do not have religious perceptions. In India, I face the other way around. There are so many gods that it really causes confusion. And believe me, I was crazy myself. And I was searching for a lot of answers in my journey with spirituality. And it so happened that I was doing a lot of alternative, you know, I was fed up with medical science and I looked for, you know, meditation and yoga and I did alternative healing techniques and I stopped studying medicine, literally went into sociology and criminology and I studied different subjects so that fortunately I not only teach in medical science, I teach in social science, I teach in management studies and thanks to AA. Because I could correlate that whatever is described in scientific literature, whatever has been mentioned in religious sutras is in very simple terms communicated by philosophy of AA for simple people. I did look up the Prayer of Serenity and when I went through, I said, hell no, Jean-Paul Sartre talked about existential school, same. Adi Shankaracharya of Hindu literature, of philosophy, talked about the same thing. That when an arrow comes out of the bow at any one given time, it can be only at one place, and that's what the program says, one day at a time. Now, it so happened that we started this organization. One gentleman came in, help him out. Second gentleman came in, he had severe physical problems related to withdrawals. So that's where the doctor comes in. I went in, helped him out. For almost 15 years, you see, India is a very peculiar combination of, different social circumstances. Funding is one of the issues. Personnel is another issue. So there was problem in this kind of organization. And, for 15 years I worked without any kind of salary. I was doing other kind of activities which helped me, but this was because I was interested, because somewhere something connected, as you rightly said, that subsequently I met the professor after almost 10 years and I said, sir, I'm still functioning with these people. As of today, I'm lucky. I have been associating this activity of this for almost 25 years. We not only have sent in the city of Bombay where about 200 groups of AA are going on every single day. It's multilingual. There's the local language, national language, international language, different groups, Al-Anon groups, Al-Teen. We have AA in our place. But as this theme says, that I am responsible. It comes only by taking that responsibility. In the morning again, I had a discussion and the question was why healthcare professionals do not have that perception. And I might sound a little cynical or critical, but the modern medicine has come to a system, a situation, where a patient goes to a hospital, he is given what is known as symptom checklist. There are three forms, one to be filled up by the patient, one by the relative, and one by the person who is attending. Most of the time that does not happen. They would fill in those two in a computer, put a dime, and press a button. So, it comes out. It tells you what problem you have got. So you take out that form, put it in another machine, put another dime, press a button, it tells you what treatment you should take. And then you take that and put it in another machine and press a button, it tells you where will you get it. What medicine you should take. Well, I very much agree with my previous speaker, what is necessary, which I again learned from AA. When two alcoholics talk, they don't think about even the bottle. That it is sharing. As a simple homework, I would ask, all of you to do this, ask this question to at least 20 people whom you know. Who listens to you? And the popular response was, nobody listens to me. And then the next question is, if nobody is listening, why are you talking? Now, obviously, when such question comes, my mind turns to AA to find an answer. Believe me, AA has given me a hell of a lot number of answers in my search. It gave me an answer. If you don't listen, if you don't talk, share. And that sharing which really helps. It is, there are different kind of people. Those who think from here, those who think from here, those who think above here, and those who think below here. This was a beautiful insight given to me by one of my patients. I am grateful to all of you for giving me this patient hearing. If there are any questions, I would be glad to answer. Thank you very much.
We have heard some wonderful talks, and I know that we've just begun to scratch the surface of what our speakers might be able to share with us. And I want to invite you all to ask questions, and we'll spend some time in dialogue. We'll do a little asking, we'll do a little talking, and we'll do a little listening, because people really are here to listen and to share and to talk with each other. So please, if you have... If you have questions, please come to the mic, which is over here, and we'll take it from there.
Hi, my name is Marie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marie.
I would just like to know, how can you help the women alcoholics in India from here, like maybe online, or because I can't go to India, and I know a lot of people would be interested in helping them, but they probably can't go to India either, so... I was just wondering if you had any suggestions.
Maria wants to swarm but can't quite get there. So,
I very much respect your thought. Yes, we do need, maybe I do not speak in what I spoke earlier, gender problem. It is a very significant problem. For every probably 100 alcoholics, there is one woman who needs help, and at times they don't get help. The question which you asked, well, how can you help Indian women from here? I have no answer to that question. I'm being honest. If at all, maybe you can associate with other group of people who are planning something to go there, whether they are from Canada or from US or any other place. Maybe modern technology can help you, internet connections. you can get in touch with one of the, say, organization like ours, Kripa Foundation. You can look at the website, Kripa Foundation, and you can communicate with them. You may be able to help in some way or another. Thank you.
I want to add my 2 cents, because I agree with the general notion that it's hard to help between here and there, wherever there is. But you know what? Each person in this room knows what it means to be helped and how that feels, and understands the importance of unleashing that kind of healing energy between people, which is clearly what your question is about. And from my brief life experience, I know that if people put their minds to helping other people, as Dr. Garigiani suggested, there are ways that you could work in this country with other people who are doing something in India, in a particular place. And when we individually make a commitment to helping some person or people in our own special way, we can make it happen. I think that's part of the I am responsible thing, isn't it? Please.
Good morning. My name is Sally Ann. I'm an alcoholic.
Good morning, Sally Ann.
From New York, is that better? Buffalo, New York.
Good.
Serenity, no. Spiritual Progress Group. And I wanted to thank Dr. Clark and Dr. Luongo because, you know, you're very good. It's good to know of people in the medical profession who understand, well, who know about alcoholism. And Dr. Lee, thank you very much. That's wonderful, the work you're doing. And Dr. Garigiani, my son-in-law's family comes from Kerala, and they're back and forth between India and the United States all the time. Unfortunately, I'm not in that bracket. But I'm thinking that if I can get together with some people here, maybe we can ship something over when they go. You know, that might be of help. Does anybody know anything about anything that's being organized is basically what I'm asking, and I'm afraid you probably don't know, you know, what we're doing here yet, since it only started yesterday. But miracles happen, as we know.
Thank you. Please.
I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic from Edmonton, Alberta, here in Canada.
Hi, Lindsay.
I'm looking around. From what I understood, there was one doctor from Connecticut who took AA to China, and I'm wondering if he's in the room.
Someone raised his hand in the back there.
I think we should give him a hand.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. These kinds of connections are important.
I'm from the Happy Hour Group in Stark, Florida. My name's Louis. I'm an
Hi, Lloyd.
I'd just like to make a statement. I do a lot of work with our hospital. I'm very blessed to be near a teaching hospital. And about 4 years ago, I connected up with a doctor in that hospital that's a friend of AA. And every graduating semester, he has me come in, and I bring a box of big books and 2 racks of literature, and I take about an hour and a half, and I tell the doctors about AA. And they were kind of like our doctor right here, that they have no clue what AA is. And if nothing else, by the time that hour and a half's over with, at least they know a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous, and they're able to get pamphlets and literature and books and all that good stuff. So I encourage anybody that lives anywhere near a doctor's teaching hospital to, you know, get in touch with somebody. Thanks.
Thanks for your statement. Peter?
Thank you. Not just the physicians. Nursing students, social work students, psychology students. You get now, if you look at curricula, you'll see that people have course requirements. This is sort of like printing a pamphlet and saying you have a program. It's the first step, and it's good it's there, but not just the physicians.
It is very interesting. I am responsible, so I expect the doctors to do something. And if I personally do not take responsibility of making them aware, it's not going to happen. But each one of us have that responsibility where it is not only, as you rightly said, that, you know, to communicate, to talk, to tell them about such a program which is helping a hell of a lot number of people. But most of the time, the technical, administrative, you know, problems, they come in the way. In fact, I did take up this issue and I encouraged a group of people to do advocacy to introduce AA as a part of syllabus of medical students in which they better learn. They have to know about the program and as part of educational policy, they have to attend the meetings. Believe me, I did not see any of my senior doctors attending meeting to understand the program to help other people. Though I have seen a lot of my senior doctors attending meeting for their personal recovery. But somewhere, I also must mention that there is, maybe this is again, I with all due apologies, I also find a lot of critical attitude towards the doctors, professionals, in group of Alcoholic Anonymous members. Where somewhere we need to examine ourselves that if I do not criticize others, then I will not get criticism from them. Somewhere I have to examine my own self, and as rightly the young person here said that, I take that responsibility that I need to do something for someone suffering with problems of alcoholism. Thank you very much.
Please go ahead.
Hi, my name's Geraldine, and I'm a friend of AA.
Hi, Geraldine.
I'm actually a doctor, and I come from New Zealand. And I would agree with what the speakers have said. In my own experience as a doctor, I knew nothing about alcoholism from my life or from my family or from medical school. I learnt it from my patients. I learnt it from AA members. And when I read the big book and when I read it, as I still do, and when I think about its message, when I attend meetings and listen to people sharing, listen to AA's sharing, I think very hard about the elements that can help my profession. People, AAs look to me as a doctor, as an AA friend, as somebody who can take the message to my profession. And I can try doing that, and I can try using science and research to do that. But that is, you can call it a truth. It's a truth that can be argued with. It's a different kind of truth than experiential truth that you people know. Nobody can argue with your truth. AA has helped you and it has changed you, and what I would like to suggest, because people have done it to me, I'm a GP, I'm a family doctor, is when everybody goes to their doctor for a blood pressure check, if you felt appropriate, why not share something? Why not say, doctor, can I just tell you something? That is a truth that the doctor cannot argue with. It's a powerful truth. It is actually the same power of sharing as somebody shared with you. When I read the big book and I thought carefully about the role of Dr. Silkworth, who did have a very important role, I was encouraged by that. And I also thought about the truth in the first step, which, to my way of interpreting it, encompassed the disease model, it encompassed the psychiatric classification that we doctors use now, which is DSM-4, in that first step spoke to me. What Dr. Silkworth did to Bill W. was he acknowledged that Bill had an illness, had a disease. He had no idea of the solution, and he didn't try. But by telling Bill that he was an alcoholic, that was a powerful and important thing that doctor did. when I thought more deeply about Dr. Silkworth and how he didn't have to provide the solution, he did provide the diagnosis. As a doctor, not just dealing with people that are alcoholic and suffering from chemical dependency, I found it liberating. I don't have to solve, I don't necessarily have to cure, but I do have a great deal of knowledge, a skill and a craft, and I can impart that by listening carefully, as our speakers have said, by making a good diagnosis, sharing and giving that diagnosis, and then leaving it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Geraldine. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. My name's Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
I'm from Iowa in the USA. I just had a question in regards to the doctor from Beijing.
Move right up to the mic, Tom.
Okay. Yesterday, there was some sharing from a friend in Mexico about the problem of getting literature into Cuba, and they're not allowed to print and distribute literature or AA literature within Cuba. And I was wondering what the current situation is in regards to the possibility of the big book being printed and distributed within China, and also the limitations on public information. How is the information disseminated? Is it word of mouth? Or, I mean, how do you get information out about the availability of AA and groups and the meetings?
You know, we never print the big book in China, but we get the big book from the GSO. They mail the books for us. And, you know, in China, we open door to the outside world. Our government, I think now, has accepted the new things. And also AA, it's... I think our doctor in the beginning with in the hospital so the government think we treat people. AA is a kind of treatment. So now nobody interfere AA's activity. So we go smoothly. I don't think there is any difficulties to have AA in hospital or outside of hospital now. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Please.
I'm an alcoholic and addict. My name is Rich.
Hi, Rich.
Scotch Plains, New Jersey. Good morning, everybody. Mm-hmm. Dr. Wing, thank you for reading my mail. Like we say today, I was going to ask you a question about that, about the open door policy in China. I want to thank the whole panel. I'm very gratified and honored, and for all the good work you're doing and continuing to do to help carry the message of recovery to those who need it, who all want it in Alcoholics Anonymous, or could potentially be members of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I was going to ask you, Doctor, after what I just heard now, your response to the fact that China, the biggest country in the world with the most people in the world, has an open door policy to Alcoholics Anonymous, respectfully. Dr. Ling, I have to disagree with what you said. When we see you in San Antonio in 2010, I said there's going to be hundreds of meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in China. And Dr. Jarajani, thousands of meetings in India. And women will be coming and going freely to meetings in India at the time. And I want to thank you all and everybody. God bless us all.
Please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Celine, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Celine.
I'm also a practitioner, nurse. I'm planning to go to India in next autumn. And I would like to know how to reach a meeting, or I don't know if you are on the international book that we have.
India is a large, 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 large country. Which part of India you will be in?
Well, how many meetings did you say you had? You don't have that much.
No. It is only in my city that we have 200 meetings.
So that's where I'm going to go.
Let me repeat. I come from Bombay. If you are going to Bombay, you can go to any church, literally, and ask, or you can ask any of your friends there, that literally there are meetings every Sunday. If it is in Bombay, you will get meetings everywhere.
Okay.
Practically every day you can find out from your friends there, you know, people who are going to church, people who are going to, you will find it out. It's not difficult at all. If you are in Bombay, if you are in Chennai, which is down south, it will be easier for you to find those meetings. But if you are in the periphery or on the rural sides, it will be difficult for you to get the meetings.
Okay, thank you.
Please go ahead.
I'm Trish. I'm an alcoholic and an addict.
Hi, Trish.
And I'm very nervous.
It's okay. Me too.
I am a nurse as well. It's another label that I wear. I was married to a doctor for 23 years who had a lot of trouble with my addiction problem. I think I wear kind of three hats because I'm AA, a nurse, and I'm an expert patient. I was attacked by a grizzly years ago, and I've had over 30 surgeries and ongoing infection and bounced in and out of psych wards like a revolving door. And it's interesting that when I decided to tackle the abuse of psychotropic drugs that I'd used to cope, and I would mix them with alcohol. That's how I drank, so I feel like I'm a weirdo because I haven't met anybody else who did that. I did it to blackout and an escape from what I was feeling. But last fall, I decided to go to a treatment center. I ended up in the psych ward, and the psychiatrist I ran into said basically that I was a hopeless case and that there were no further treatment options. And my comment in terms of AA is that my experience with AA in the last 9 months of sober time that I have is that nothing I've learned in psychiatry to date has helped me as much as the support and fellowship. And I guess if I had a question, and maybe it's a very difficult one or a broad one, is what is the relationship between trauma and alcoholism, and how could that better be addressed by our psychiatric facilities and system?
Here? You got the system, right?
Let me give you a simple story that'll help, I hope. After the Vietnam War, we had a whole set of physicians and nurses who were expert at battlefield medicine, that golden hour after trauma and injury. They learned on the battlefield how to save people's lives, and that's still going on today. In Maryland, a bunch of those docs came back and started a world-class shock trauma unit, the University of Maryland. Terrific place. Marvelous things. Probably one of the scariest places on the planet to walk if you're not used to being around, you know, medical things. Those are, they save people who are almost unsavable. There are also traumas that they handle that are the result of alcohol and drugs. A lot of patients there. That's why they end up broken, almost dead. And sadly enough, turns out there's very few referrals for treatment that come out of patients who have been put back together at shock trauma. They stabilize people all the time. They use alcohol. They stabilize people, actually end up detoxing them, so to speak, and among other things. But there are very few referrals that end up into the alcohol and drug service. And even that patient's record doesn't indicate how involved alcohol and drugs were. If it is, it's never picked up. It's never part of the rehab program. We have a hell of a long way to go. Those are technicians, highly skilled technicians. They'd hate if I said that. But at the same time, they're missing one of the enormous ongoing issues in people's lives. So this is, again, part of what we end up having to do in terms of education. It's part of putting it and keeping it in front of our colleagues' faces so that they get it. They save lives so that sometimes people go out and do it all over again because they're missing the alcoholism.
Human mind functions on a single principle of being human. And in terms of psychology or psychiatry, I call it hedonism. People drink alcohol only for one reason, and that's to feel good. And feeling less bad is also equated with feeling good. I call this as an illness of having everything but nothing. My patients, they drink. It affects every aspect of life. They have food, they can't eat it. They have family, they don't have love and respect. They have a job, they don't go there. They have money, it doesn't remain in their pocket. In spite of having everything, these are the people who want little more, which is hedonism. Unfortunately, as you correctly said, the doctors who say that there is a hopeless case, well, believe me, there are doctors who call this as chronic manageable disease, which if you take first letter, it comes to CMD, which looks more like WMD. And I'm sure all of you are familiar what WMD is all about. It's a weapon of mass destruction. So when we look back, what I do with my clients is very simple. That if you are hypertensive, you don't feel ashamed of it. If you are diabetic, you are not feeling ashamed of it. And if you are an alcoholic, you should not be ashamed of it. You better do something about it. And that works wonders. The fact that one accepts that I have an illness and I need to do really something about it, and I don't know what to do it, and I'm getting a very reasonably good idea how should I go about doing it in the program and the meetings, I might as well do those meetings. And believe me, there are a lot of people who have come to the meetings and they will not be able to identify, and they will go back, suffer, come back to the meetings, and then the process of recovery begins. This is my observation. I have seen it for the last so many years. The people keep fluctuating. The hedonism aspect, to be a human is to seek those pleasures, of course. Thank you.
We have a lot of people lined up at the mics. Let's keep going.
Hi, my name is Ginny and I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Ginny. Come right up to the mic.
I know, I'm too short there.
Very nice.
My name is Chinni and I'm alcoholic.
Hi, Chinni.
I'm from India. And of course, I'm a female. I really admire the Chinese doctor, what she has done for the alcoholics. And I really, really thank you. I know how hard it is for Asian people to get the message. The society itself is made differently. The structure is different. And classes are different. And the expressions and language themselves are different. You cannot speak in the language you speak here, which is a lot more towards feelings, expressions, and it's a little more precise when you express in English how you feel, but when you turn it into your own Asian languages, you don't have a lot many words to express how you feel, that you are left out, you don't feel you belong. What do you mean you don't belong? We treat you well, you seem to be doing fine. And now you don't understand. What is it that I don't understand? I speak the same language. What do you mean I don't understand? it's hard. You say something, but the other person does not get it. And there are not enough words to express. And, of course, it happens in English also. A lot of people don't understand here, alcoholics and ex people and as drunks and all those things. It's there, but it's a lot more profound in Asian countries. I understand it. I looked for a solution for my problem, not knowing that it is alcoholism, for 10 full years. Door to door to door, I went searching for God, clergymen, all kinds of religion. I ran away from home. I thought it will help. I got married. I thought it will help. I got to Himalayas and then looked for God men to find. And all these things I did not find any help. Nobody spoke my language. Nobody spoke my language. But the point is, there are lots and lots of us out there who do not know how to express. And not everybody expresses our symptoms in terms of booze, because middle-class American Indians do not have access to booze. It's not that easy. So there are a lot of things there. And I had been to a few meetings since I sobered up here, and I went back to India 4 years ago. I made a few meetings in Bangalore. I did not like a little bit that I have seen, I'm telling you. There was a woman right in front of me. She came to her first meeting. She came with her husband. There were 10 men who stomped on her and then said, "You listen to your husband. You listen to your husband. He is good to you. Why don't you stop drinking?" I was horrified. That fellow came into a closed meeting, and then these people are swarming on her and treating her like that. I would not like to be treated like that. I don't think I'll ever get sober being treated that way. And I also have seen a problem with sponsorship. You need to be sober for one full year in order to qualify for sponsorship. God Almighty, if I can stay sober for one full year, why do you need a sponsor?
We have other people waiting for questions.
A few other things like that. And if I can help, I can help. But, you know, I would like to speak to you afterwards. Just, I don't know how else to get hold of you. Please get hold of me. I'll be standing there. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we'll probably have time for a couple more questions. And I know that the speakers are willing to stay and answer questions up front. So I'm sorry we're going to have to cut some people out of the line, but please go ahead for the next couple at least.
Hi, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Sherry.
Hi, Sherry.
And I'm here from Dania Beach, Florida. And in our district, as the doctor was suggesting from New Zealand, one of the ways we went about that, I was on a committee called CPC, which is Communicating with the Professional Community. And GSO actually has a kit that's conference approved so that we stay consistent with our message. And we put that together in our district. Our GSRs would take 10, 15, 20 of them back to the home group. Everybody can take one, take it to their doctor. It introduces you personally as an alcoholic. It introduces Alcoholics Anonymous. And it also gives your doctor a phone number, which is your own phone number if you're comfortable with that. It's a way for him to be a go-between for a 12-step call. You know, I'm a similarly licensed professional. I don't wear a hat of treatment, but I do look forward to those 12-step calls. And so I think if we all did that with our physicians, then that's just one more way of doing it. We all go to doctors today, and we all have that accessible to us. I want to thank you and tell you how much I respect your integrity in carrying our message. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. This will be our last question. Please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Richard. I'm an alcoholic from Cambridge in England. I'm also an occupational therapist, which is a profession not mentioned very often. I've worked in a mental health team for quite a few years, and I was just thinking before, it's difficult when you've had someone on your caseload and they die, and they've been to AA, and they've stopped going to AA, and your colleagues know you're in AA. And it's just kind of, just to leave that really, I mean, there's a lot more we can perhaps do to support people who are actually working in teams and who are known to be alcoholics in those teams when things go wrong. And I just wanted to leave that as something for people to perhaps think about. Thanks.
Thank you very much.